Lie down. Go to bed.
Go to sleep, Snoop.
Okay.
Go to sleep, Snoop. Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
That'll do it. Okay. We good? Otto is not here, as you can see. Otto, well, we'll have thoughts on that. But at least Snoopy's here at the outset, and that was it. And you got a chance. This is not working. I have to admit it. Maybe as they get older, something has changed, but I can't figure out what it is. Anyway, welcome to the Fireside Chat number 280, correct, Megan?
Yes.
Number 280. You know that I'm not OCD. I don't have those tendencies, but I will admit that the fact that we missed one in 280 weeks still gnaws at me. I mean, when you're that close to complete, to perfection, it's not, if we had missed six, okay, but one. All right, everybody. Hi, it's my chance to talk to you about what's on my mind and take your questions each week. So I got some feedback from last week's opening where I offered some thoughts about my upbringing. And Megan, tell me if I have this right, where I mentioned that at 14, my parents sort of gave up on trying to get me to do homework and schoolwork and whatever they want. How did that happen?
And for those listening on podcasts,
Otto, they rather see your face.
Otto has entered the...
Okay. So at 14, they simply decided, and there was some tension in the house, admittedly. That's all right. Not the first house in history to have any tension in it. They just decided, Dennis, we're doing what you have asked for. Nothing. We will do nothing. So they became the opposite of helicopter parents. They even said, did I mention this? They didn't even insist on seeing my report card.
No, you didn't mention
that. Oh, this is dramatic. Do the kids still get report cards? Or is it like regular updates on the internet? Anyway, we got physical report cards. What was it? I think four times a year. And they said, you know what? You can sign our name on your report card as if we saw it, because the parent had to sign it, that they had seen the report card. That's how thoroughly they opted out of my life, and I thrived from that day to this. If I knew the date that they said it, I could date my happy life and from my unhappy life. So the issue rose, you mentioned, that adults you were talking to said, well, wait a minute. You know, there's got to be, I'm paraphrasing, there's got to be a middle road between helicopter parent and doing nothing, basically, just providing room and board. And because let's say, this again, I'm quoting you from these people, how do you know what your child will do if you're not watching out, mm-hmm. to some degree at least? Right. What if they fall in with a bad crowd? So I said to you that was not a danger in my life. I did not have any attraction to bad kids. It's just not in my nature. I'm not taking any credit for it. It's not my nature. I didn't have to fight that. Secondly, I didn't have a bad crowd. I went to a religious Jewish school called a yeshiva. Not every kid was an angel, but there were no drug dealers or bad kids or nobody was holding up the local 7-Eleven or something. So there was no bad crowd that they had to worry about. By the way, in that regard, it was so much easier to be a parent two generations ago, three, four, five, six, throughout our history, at least as in America, and I suspect in many countries, but I'll just speak to America. you know, if you sent your kid to school, the school had the same values your home did. The teachers shared your values. There was no, you weren't at war with society. Parents today are at war with, literally, they're at war. I don't mean shooting war, but it's literal war. There are wars without shooting. So anyway, that was not a danger, and obviously it didn't materialize. So I just wanted to comment on that. Look, there are kids where you really do have to watch what they're doing. You have to monitor their phone. Maybe they shouldn't even have a phone except for phone calls to you. I mean, the things that parents have to worry about today, that's one of the reasons, given how much you have to worry about your kid anyway, and how much you have to involve yourself in whatever it is you're involving yourself in their lives, you might as well homeschool them. Yeah. When I tell you, I keep meeting homeschooled kids. They're so mature and so happy compared to other kids. Not in every single case, but in every single case I have met. So one more thing before I take your questions. I'd like to pose a challenging question to those of you worried, really worried, some cases apparently worried sick, literally, about global warming, climate change, and the whole thing. So I'd like to pose a question to you. I just saw a tweet that Greta Thunberg, the Swedish girl who's like the symbol of activism on behalf of ceasing carbon emissions, 5 years ago, she sent out a tweet, something to the effect that in 5 years, if we don't do something, or even maybe she did write it, you know, we will be extinct. This is 5 years later. It's like science fiction. We're not close to being extinct. We're not moving toward extinction. So I got a very simple question. Why would you trust the people who are scaring you about the existential threat, as they put it, of carbon emissions? Why would you trust them? These are the same people who told you lockdowns were necessary. And people like me, and I was not alone at all, knew that the lockdowns were a colossal mistake and close to evil. What they did to people's lives, what they did to children by shutting down schools, the people who said shut down schools, and who hurt children, let's emphasize, really, really hurt children, are the people who tell you that carbon emissions constitute an existential threat to biological life, certainly to human life. The people who said you should wear masks and you had to wear a mask, or you were thrown off an airplane, or you couldn't enter a restaurant. In fact, they shut down restaurants for quite some time, which had a terrible effect on restaurants like it did on other small businesses. Turns out the greatest reviewer of medical or scientific studies, called the Cochrane Review. I don't know if it's affiliated with Oxford, but I know that one of the lead epidemiologists of the study is at Oxford University in England, basically said that reviewing every study, and they don't have any position, they just review studies. They're essentially worthless with regard to viral transmission, and this COVID was a virus. So the people who told you to cover up and had a terrible impact on children, and in my opinion, on adults. And at the time, you may recall, I said, I walked through airports without a mask. There were times I was the only one of 1,000 people not wearing a mask. It got easier. I will admit, it's hard in the beginning, but it got easier over time. What you do regularly becomes easier, whether it's good or whether it's bad. In any event, the people who told you about that, are the same ones to tell you that was an existential threat if there is if we don't stop carbon emissions. The people who tell you that it is okay to cut girls' breasts off if they say they're boys. Isn't there such a thing as credibility? Maybe the critics of these people, the skeptics who were right in every instance, maybe it's worth listening to them on this one. Maybe shattering economies, which has horrible effects on people. In the Netherlands, they're confiscating people's farms because meat eating produces carbon emissions. I mean, maybe they're just wrong again. They're wrong all the time. Credibility is everything in life. You know, I took a minority stand when I said that schools should be open, when I said that lockdowns were completely unacceptable morally, let alone health-wise. And I was right on both. So I should have credibility, and the people telling you that we have to get rid of natural gas, and we can't, which is beyond belief, you even use nuclear power, which is completely carbon-free. It's the cleanest energy and far more reliable than turbines or solar. But it's painful for me to say, credibility doesn't seem to matter. If you own the media and you own the schools, people believe you. If you just utter the words experts, but there are plenty of experts. Look up the Great Barrington Declaration, the thousands of scientists who differed with the so-called experts. They were experts, but they never got reported. People believe what is reported. That's the sad truth. If it's widely reported, it's widely believed. That's been a lesson of the last couple of years. And vaccines for children, COVID vaccines, or healthy young people, or not allowing the greatest tennis player in the world to come to play at the U.S. Open because the guy's not vaccinated. And I'm saying this to you in March of 2023. That the president of the United States has barred this man from coming. You know how silly America looks? Deservedly so. I hate to say because I love this country, but deservedly so. Okay. Whom do you believe? The answer is those who've been believable. All right, let's go to thine questions. Okay, here we go.
Hi, Dennis. I'm Deidre Shavira. I'm 28 years old in Los Angeles, California. We know that capitalism lifts more people out of poverty than anything and that socialism is not the answer. But people are burnt out with the way that society operates. Do you think it's possible that humanity could come together and invent some new alternative way of structuring society and life that doesn't involve the constant hamster wheel of production towards capitalism, nor the futility and oppression of socialism?
So first of all, people are burnt out with the way that society operates. That was an interesting little phrase there, Deidre, and I thank you for sending in a question. What does it mean people are burnt out? I understand being burned out, but every one of us has to be clear what's burning us out. I feel burnt out by the increasing size of the government taking over more and more of people's lives, telling parents that they don't know how to raise their children. The teachers know better. I'm burnt out at all the rules that governed life in the last few years. I can't go into a restaurant. I have to wear a mask if I'm 2 years old on an airplane. But I'm burnt out from capitalism is basically free economy. Free doesn't burn you out. Oppression burns you out. So I just want to say that. Capitalism isn't perfect because human beings are involved and human beings are profoundly imperfect. That's why there is nothing that always works. I'm a big advocate of biblical-based religion, but there are a lot of people who believe in the Bible who didn't turn out so nice. I fully acknowledge that. The human being's capacity to screw up everything is quite strong. Nevertheless, the idea, why don't we come up with something other than those two? I can't imagine. I don't know what that would be. The answer is mixed economy, but they're all, we all have mixed economies today. There, almost every European and country in North America, it's a mixed economy. But it's heading towards socialism because that means massive power in the hands of the government. I don't want the government raising my children. I don't want the government to take half of people's money away and spend it on projects that are of its liking, but may not be all that good for society. I'm sorry, there really is, I don't think there is a better way. I think that what we need to do in life is take the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. That is the better way to govern a society. I don't expect government to do much good, but I don't want it to do harm. That a government that does very little harm is a really wonderful government. I don't look to it to do a lot of good. You know, the Ten Commandments, all the commandments about ethics, do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false testimony, do not commit adultery. Notice they're all in the negative. You know that there's only one, there are only two positive commandments in all Ten Commandments. Otherwise, they're all in the negative. Desisting from doing bad is the best way to make a good society. Because if people don't hurt people, you've gone a very long way in making a good world. I would like people to do good, but I'll be pretty content if they do no harm. That's the way law is made. And I fear big government, which is socialism, much more than I fear a free economy. 100 million people were murdered in the 20th century. I'm not talking about soldiers, civilians, all by big government. It is amazing, again, like I spoke about credibility before. Why does big government have big credibility? Well, that's a subject for another time. Rachel, 38, New York City. Hello, Dennis, longtime fan and listener. My husband and I have been married 7 years and have 3 children under 6. We also have opposing political views. You don't know how often I get this call on my radio show. This was never a particularly intrusive issue since we are bonded in our faith and religion. However, since COVID, the disparities in our politics have been a main source of contention, especially in regard to masks and vaccines. He is still hyper-vigilant when it comes to masking and social distancing. His anxiety is consuming our day-to-day life and the flourishing of our children and family as a whole. Are there any strategies you would recommend about how to establish reasonable boundaries, minimize conflict, and approach difficult conversations? I look forward to hearing your advice. It would be easier if you asked me the square root of 17 to answer your question. I don't want to make things worse with my response. On the other hand, I also don't want to evade what I believe is the issue. The issue is not COVID. It's not masks. And it's not vaccines. It is that your husband has an anxious nature. People are born with natures, or they develop because of upbringing. That's the old nature-nurture question. There is so much evidence that masks are worthless. let alone at this point, so long after the virus, but at any point. See pictures of Sweden during the worst of COVID, people living a fully normal life at cafes and restaurants and bars. Why didn't Swedes die in vast numbers? Now, then people will say, oh, well, the Swedish death rate was greater than that of Denmark, Norway, and Denmark and Finland, even though Finland's not Scandinavia, strictly speaking. But that was only among people in nursing homes. That was the reason for it. But the Finns have said that they would emulate the Swedes if there's another virus and they wouldn't lock down. Anyway, my only point is, I know people like your husband. I know of them at least. And that since their anxiety is not evidence-based, evidence will not change their minds. That's the problem. It is his personality. And he may be a wonderful human being. I'm sure he is. You wouldn't have married him if he weren't. But what did Jordan Peterson say when I asked him in Florida a couple of months ago, do we ever know people until they're tested? And he said, no. And that's it's a very interesting thing to realize. So you're discovering your husband's nature, or part of which you didn't know till now, because there was no test. So if he's open intellectually to hearing evidence, there's a real chance. If he's not, then the anxiety needs to be dealt with, and you can beg him as his loving wife to perhaps see someone about his anxiety. When I see a person wearing a mask outdoors, where I live in Southern California, when I see, at any time, but especially now, so much after the illness, I realize I'm looking at someone who is governed by psychological things that I can't relate to. I don't understand having irrational fears. I'm blessed. I don't think I have any irrational fears. I have rational fears, one of them being that my country is headed towards being less free than at any time in its history. I think that's rational. I mean, otherwise, it is a blessing in my life that I don't have those. Listen, there are people who were afraid to go on an airplane. It's truly analogous to your husband's situation. So if you tell them that it's statistically much safer to fly than to go in a car, it has no impact. They don't fear flying for rational reasons. So rational reasons will not dissuade them from their fear of airplanes. What they need to do, and by the way, somebody did this. Somebody told me they watched the fireside chat when I spoke about fear and what I used flying. And I said, if you fear flying, you've got to do what everyone who has fears must do. Do what you fear. Get on an airplane. If you need sedatives, take sedatives. If you need friends to hold your hand, take friends. I'm sure friends would go with any of you who fear flying to get you out of that fear. She did it, and now she's fine. I was so touched from the fireside chat.
That's great.
But as I said, telling people who fear flying, hey, look at the data. The data will tell you that that flying is so safe, it'll have no effect. Unfortunately, there are people who will cite data to tell you, oh, masks work. but I'm quoting you the most revered study, review of studies in the world, the Cochrane study. Look it up on masks. Anyway, if I could speak to your husband, I would also say, do you want to be a scared daddy or a more fearless daddy to your children? Think of it that way. I would just speak man to man, father to father. Kids don't want frightened parents. That might touch his soul. What's our timing? Is that about it?
You could end on the auto comment.
Oh, yes. That's the next one.
Oh, good.
Carl, 42, Fredericksburg, Virginia. We have a good one from Norway, but I'll get to that next week. Hello. Okay. Whoops. Oh, there's a great one from a 15-year-old. There is so many. It's terrible. It's painful. Hello, Dennis. As Otto continues to abandon his post and longstanding role in the fireside chat, I have begun to wonder, does his failure to comply correlate with his rise in notoriety at the launch of his own book series and the creation of a mascot in his image? You often commented that though he may be America's most famous dog, the fame has not gone to his head. Evidence seems to be to the contrary. I can't say you're wrong. Maybe I will no longer say it has not gone to his head. That's painful. I reared him to have humility. On the other hand, his, what did you put it? His abandoning his post and longstanding role in the fireside chat may not be a function of conceit. It may be just a function of age. Otto is quite old for a bulldog, so you got to give him some slack. But I will speak to him nevertheless. Because if I detect this much, a smidgen of arrogance, I will be a very disappointed puppy.
Can you mention PragerU Kids and Otto's Tales, since that's
what that we have vast literature and so much for kids now. Where do they go? To PragerU and just look up the kids section? Is that it? Yeah. You should look at it, because it's so wholesome. It's just healthy, good stuff, which is not what they're getting in most schools today. Got a lot of other great ones here, but can't do everything. I have a 15-year-old. She wants to know. It's like a trailer for next time.
That's good.
Naomi in Bremerton, Washington, 15 years old. Hello, Mr. Prager. How do you combat your lazy nature? Well, she's a regular watcher.
I was going to say that.
She knows. I have noted that. I have a great answer. Stay tuned. Bye, everybody. Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.